or a supplier to those companies that knows its future business is at risk if it keeps the same product. So it knows it has to go to different products. Well, that's easy said, right? You set the business strategy. You say, this is what we're going to do. But shifting the organization, who's very used to bringing a certain type of product to market and just nailing it product after product after product, and now all of a sudden they're dealing with a different product where it's a lot less known, less understood. When you get to value, right, your financials, you're actually maybe targeting towards something else, because you know if you don't ever get that mix shifted, you're going to have great financials for about 2 years and you're out of business.
Welcome to Innovation Talks. Join us weekly as we discuss with distinguished industry guests how to refine and improve corporate innovation and new product development. Hosted by Paul Heller, Sophion Chief Evangelist.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I hope you're having a great week. It's good to be talking to you again. My guest today is Jared Ryan, and Jared is located in Australia. And when I first got to know Jared, he had started a company called Prodex, which he'll tell us a little bit about. Very successful company consultancy in Australia. Eventually became a reseller for Sophion. And then eventually, just recently, his company was acquired by Sophion. But he still has a very strong role. He's got a great background in innovation. And I think you'll enjoy our conversation. Jared, welcome to the show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure to be here. And I was just reflecting; I think it's something like 20 years ago that we met for the very first time. So, yeah, a long time of working together, and a long time of working in this industry.
Yeah. And so, obviously, people hear your accent; they know you're from Australia. If they're good at that thing, and I've already said it, but where in Australia? Tell us where you're from.
So, I'm based in Brisbane, and unlike I think a lot of people. Americans tend to move around the world. Europeans seem to travel everywhere. I've lived in the same city all my life. So I'm based in Brisbane on the east coast of Australia. And I also have a little getaway place down in Byron Bay, which a lot of people right on the most easterly point of Australia. So it's a beautiful part of the world, and it's a great place to escape to. So looking forward to being down there. But we've also done a lot of work from here. Across not Australia, but also throughout Australia, across New Zealand, I've worked on projects in Shanghai. We've done a lot of work in Thailand, and I used to actually teach in the MBA and in the Masters in Tech Management in both Brisbane and in Singapore. So it's been an Asia Pacific role for quite some time, and the new role with Sophion is looking after the Asia Pacific business unit. So fun to try and grow that, but also to bring some of the skills and the knowledge that we had in the Prodex team into the Sophion hall. And I guess that's a little bit of what sort of brings us together today.
Yeah. And so tell us your background. You've got a very interesting background, having actually worked in the industry and then consulted to the industry. Tell us your innovation journey.
Yeah, it sounds like a long story, but my origins, I originally studied architecture and industrial design. And finished up doing industrial design, working in the design of building systems, building componentry, furniture. Actually worked in a computer manufacturing firm in Australia that exported to 14 countries, if you believe that we ever used to make computers down here. And I ended up in the automotive plastics world as the GM of innovation for a fairly large plastics group, which expanded and moved into the North American market in quite a big way. And as part of that, I really did a lot of work to look at their entire new product development process and to take them from the dark ages of handmade pattern making to the future state of digital coordinate measurement, CNC machine tooling, five-axis routing of tools. And in the process over many years, made a lot of improvements in there. And we actually got to the point where we could capture digital geometry off a car, design parts and be fitting parts to that vehicle in less than 24 hours. So I got involved in this framework that we called accelerated product development. I then joined an organization. It was actually called the Queensland Manufacturing Institute. And the task was to help Queensland manufacturers accelerate their product development and get better at what they were doing. And they were one of the first companies in the country other than Ford Motor Company who were using 3D printing and stereo lithography way back in the early 90s. And we interviewed some clients about how the technology was working for them. They told me that they could make garbage at light speed and they could bring the perfectly wrong product to market really, really quickly. And I went to the executives and said, there's a little bit more to product development than being fast. I actually convinced them to send me off to some product development management events. And I studied under Bob Cooper and I studied under a range of different people and learned a lot around stage gate and portfolio management. And we introduced that to a lot of Australian companies. We actually trained about 350 companies over a three-year period in an integrated set of product development best practices. And that was a great thing for the Queensland Manufacturing Institute to do, except I was operating all over Australia and I was doing a lot more than the manufacturing industry. And eventually I negotiated an exit, one of those redundancies that come about in life, and I had the opportunity with four young children to embark upon the journey of setting up my own business. And what my clients had told me was, Jared, all this stage gate and portfolio management stuff is great and it makes a lot of sense, but we really need some software tools to make it easy. And so I built Prodex Systems up. It was product development excellence or process development excellence. And the journey and the concept for the business was to offer innovation management consulting services to clients, but then to have a business model that supported them with software. And I've been fortunate to be able to travel the world through the government work that I've been doing and some very large federal grants. We got to continue that work. And I was familiar with the leading consultants in the marketplace and the leading software practitioners. And I think I was very fortunate to, 20 years ago, target Sophion as the software that I saw as being the emerging provider of the future. And so I came on board. Actually, I was in Amsterdam recently for a Sophion workshop, and it was great to reflect. It was 20 years ago that I went there with your chairman, Barry Mintz, and negotiated the rights to resell Accolade software down under. And it was closed the loop to go back there 20 years later and be presenting an innovation masterclass to the Sophion leading consulting team and some of Sophion's leading clients. So, it's been quite a long journey. What I love about this sector is that every company is completely different. They're operating in different industries. They've got different levels of innovation maturity. And we learn along the way a whole variety of tools that you use in different circumstances to help those companies on that journey. But they're great people. I mean, people are innovating to try and do clever things to make more money in their businesses. And it's great to work in business growth and it's great to work with clever people. So it's a very enjoyable sector. And it's, as I think you know very well, Paul.
Yeah, for sure. And as do most of our listeners. You and I have talked a lot about doing the right products, and sometimes it's the process around a single product that matters, like you mentioned, the stage gate process. But really, in the broader context, it's portfolio management. And you've done a lot lately around portfolio management, and I think that would be a great topic for us to talk about today. I know you've come up with some key themes around portfolio management. Why don't you just, start to give us your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess one of my great coaches in life along this way has been Bob Cooper, Dr. Robert Cooper, who, when I was bringing companies out to Australia or consultants out to Australia to help with the training programs we ran, Bob was among those. And so I've been working with him for many, many years. And I guess that, it goes back to that Peter Drucker comment about it being far more important to develop the right products than it is to develop products right, if that's an interpretation of his language, because he was talking about, I guess, business strategy in general. But I guess it's the challenge that across most businesses. I've heard the words, how do we get to fewer, bigger, better, in many, many boardrooms and executive meetings over time. And I think there's often a frustration. There's a frustration from management that we're not fast enough. There's a tendency from management to increase the growth from new products by trying to push more product development projects into the pipeline. And all the people that are involved in queuing theory, smart guys like Don Reinertsen, who wrote Developing Products in Half the Time, will tell you when you push more things in, you actually slow things down. So we've only got to think about the on-ramps on freeways to understand the need to pulse projects through a system. But I guess that one of the key practices is in the context of portfolio management is trying to get three key things right. And I think those three key things are about alignment, balance, and value. So those three things, A, B, and V, and if there was a simple takeaway from this conversation, that would be a great little three-letter acronym to remember. And alignment is really about its fit with the business strategy. Is it really taking you where you want to be? And clearly you can unpack that innovation strategy in a host of different ways. Balance clearly links into that. And so balance can be what's the mix of our projects across different types? So we could have a client who's doing innovation across Australia and New Zealand. We could have a client that's doing innovation across a whole range of different categories. We could also be looking at the balance across what's the proportion of Horizon 1, Horizon 2, and Horizon 3 projects that we have in our portfolio. So balance is a very, very multidimensional word, and we really need to consider that in a lot of ways. And then obviously the last one is value, and everyone jumps immediately to business value. What's the highest year one incremental NSV? What's the highest EBIT on our projects? But we also use a framework that I call the dimensions of value or the value lenses, and we talk about strategic value, customer value, and business value. And often when we end up with a client and a set of projects and we're trying to rank and prioritize projects, the first view that's often created is some form of simple Pareto chart with the highest business value project at the top and ranked through with this very, very long tail and all of these much lower value projects at the bottom. And of course, there's an imperative to do the big value projects. But if you think about the analogy of too many projects and how do I get to fewer, bigger, better, what we want to have is some frameworks for tackling the tail of that long Pareto chart and challenging those projects and saying, are they really worth doing? And so bringing in another lens that looks at perhaps their strategic value and customer value as well as their business value, or considering their probability of technical and commercial success as well as their business value. Often these different lenses give us a framework that teases out the more attractive from the least attractive projects and aids in that decision-making process. So I think that those three dimensions, alignment, balance, and value, kind of become the foundation of good and effective portfolio management. And there's clearly a very strong linkage between those because the business strategy could be to, you know, someone like Tesla comes to the market and they're only working on Horizon 2 and 3 projects. There's very, very little that's incremental and tactical. A lot of companies that we work with operate in the food and beverage sector, and for them, they've got to keep the cash cows alive, and 80% of their innovation pipeline is tied up with renovations and line extensions of existing products, with some smaller percentage in products that are new to category, new to company, and many of those won't even play in the new to world space. So choosing and setting the portfolio targets and then linking your innovation strategy to your business strategy becomes a pivotal part of creating alignment between what's happening in the R&D, the innovation and the new product world, and what the business is seeking to do from a growth and governance perspective.
I think that's, couldn't agree more. I like ABV, easy to remember. But, you know, I'm thinking of companies that I've worked with that have a changing business strategy at the highest level. Could be a food company that wants to get maybe shifting to from one product type to another, maybe with the healthy, more healthy foods or what have you, or it could be a company that's trying to shift its products maybe to be more sustainable, or as you said, I mean, a company that was, you know, maybe a leader in automotive and all of a sudden needs to get to electrified vehicles, or a supplier to those companies that knows its future business is at risk if it keeps the same product. So it knows it has to go to different products. Well, that's easy said, right? You set the business strategy, you say, this is what we're going to do. But shifting the organization, who's very used to bringing a certain type of product to market and just nailing it product after product after product, and now all of a sudden they're dealing with a different product where it's a lot less known, less understood. When you get to value, right, your financials, you're actually maybe targeting towards something else, because you know if you don't ever get that mix shifted, you're going to have great financials for about 2 years and you're out of business. And I know both of us have seen that, our companies that have struggled with that. So I think, you know, what was going through my mind as you were talking about alignment, balance, value was also that challenge that many companies have.
Yeah, we talk about that as really strategic shift. And so for the food companies, the beverage companies, Thailand introduced a new sugar tax, so everybody was seeking to reduce the sugar level out of the many, many energy drinks that are born in that particular marketplace. So that's a simple example of a strategic shift. And clearly, we've got a lot of players in the snack industry, in the carbonated beverage industry. We've got people in the beer industry, the wine industry that we're working with, and there's quite a strong need to create that shift. But somehow you've got to keep those cash cows alive. You've got to derive your revenue from the base products. But it's probably been most apparent, one of the major sectors that we've done a lot of work with down here is in the paper and packaging sector. And we've got a client, for example, who was very strong, the market leader in the creation of white office papers. And clearly with the digitalization of the world, we're all printing less and using less. And so white office paper was in decline. And so needing to shift from white paper to brown paper is not an easy thing to do in a paper mill. And you often get an asset that might be a $1 billion asset. It's an enormous piece of processing equipment. And even to change thickness from one grade to another has to be achieved over a significant period of time. There's a lot of planning, a lot of coordination, and it's it really is this enormous continuous production machine environment, and it's really, really difficult to pivot and to swap and jump and move in a different industry. So yeah, that concept of strategic shift, it affects all industries. I think there was a quote I learned long ago, which was, you will in your industry ultimately go out of business, it's just a matter of time. So you need to keep reinventing yourself and redefining the industry that you're in. And so that's a big piece of that. And it's fun when you get into that linkage between strategy. We've done a lot of work with companies in the dairy sector, and I've had some very strong conversations. Are you in the dairy sector or you're in the milk sector? And I had a fairly blinkered business owned by a dairy farmers co-op tell me that no, we are in the dairy sector. And then obviously the world of alternate milks and oat milks and almond milks and et cetera has been a phenomenal success, and one of the top 10 selling food products in North America last year was one of the oat milk products. So it's about how you frame it, and it's about what your strategy is.
Yeah, that's some interesting, some great examples, Jared. For those of you who can access events in Australia, Jared Ryan is facilitating his next Idea to Launch Innovation Masterclass at the Melbourne Business School on the 30th of April and the 1st of May, 2024. For more information and to sign up, head to our events page at sofion.com/about/events, or go to the Sofion website and search for a masterclass. You know, you've come up with 10 key practices for portfolio management success, and that's actually part of a course that you teach. I think we covered a few of them, but let's start stepping through those.
Sure. So I guess we touched on the ABV, easy to remember acronym, and I guess they give you frameworks that lead to the key topic of portfolio and project prioritization. Just as gatekeeping is about promoting the strong projects and demoting the weak projects and diverting their resources, and we're increasingly seeing a linkage between those companies that are using a gated governance model and the portfolio model to ask, what is the portfolio impact of this project? Does it take us to where we want to be from a strategic point of view, from a balance point of view, et cetera? I guess the other piece is that one of those dimensions of balance is also balancing the dimension of risk. So the risk appetite of the organization is expressed through its degree of innovation ambition. And I've worked with many executives who will tell you that we emphatically do not play in new to world. That's not us. We will adopt the market position of being a fast follower, and then they deploy all of the business traits of what a fast follower means in the marketplace. So they need to be good at it. They need to be fast. If they're going to follow, they're not going to get that market advantage that the first mover gets. And there's a whole study that is called the Profit Impact of Market Share that looks at the proportion of the total market that the innovator gets when they're first to market, second to market, third to market, etc. And again, to go back to our friends at Tesla, that's a great example of the proportion of the EV market that they gained, but by taking significant risk and coming out. So it's a, you know, we're not all playing in that space, but it's a useful model to understand how we go about things. I think some of the other dimensions are portfolio visibility. So I guess it's one of the attributes that we enable through a digital platform is to make the decisions around the portfolio more evident. But it's also, we talk about what I refer to as the innovation forums. And there's clearly, there's a stage gate or a gated project governance forum. Are these projects the right ones to do? Should we continue? There's a portfolio management forum, which is around, does this set of projects add up and give us the results that we're looking for in terms of alignment, business and value, and of course in terms of business value? And then there's the innovation planning lens, which is looking at what we could do and casting our eye to the future and leading us into the world of technology road mapping and strategic road mapping and linking unmet consumer needs and insights through to product and technology opportunities. And then finally, the whole forum of targeted ideation and idea campaigns. So when we talk about portfolio visibility, a lot of our clients will use a process and they refer to it as the PMR process or the portfolio management review process. And that's a popular acronym that's in common use. But it's often used to measure the score of the contribution from the active portfolio of projects. Whereas there is also a portfolio of innovation projects that we could do and a portfolio of ideas that we could do. So the concept of a portfolio is much broader than that. And that probably leads to the next one, which I refer to as, I'm calling it data governance, but ahead of that, it's probably portfolio governance. One of the things I was recently able to do in the last few years was to complete the company director's course, where one of the key teachings is to put on the hat and adopt the mindset of the director of the company. So if you think about, act like a business owner, a director, a responsible shareholder or a responsible board member of an organization, then one of the challenges that we have from an innovation point of view is to set the organization up to make appropriate investments in today's products, next year's products and future products, and making sure the business isn't blindsided by a strategic event that takes them out in the marketplace, that makes sure they're not overstepping their financial capability and taking on more risk than the business can continue to fund. So that governance role plays very much into what we're doing. And in fact, we've kind of evolved the framework that we talk about and use the language systematic innovation governance. And some years ago, I was asked to present the keynote paper at a conference in the pulp and paper and packaging industry. And I asked for several weeks to reflect on it and to think about whether I could deliver value in that industry. And the framework that we adopted was a challenging one, because I think the intent was that you'd somehow come up with a silver bullet and help these people with very expensive assets turn on a dime when they couldn't, or pivot when it was impossible to. And so the framework that we presented wearing that governance hat was around the concept that if you're not taking the long-term view, if you're not taking the strategic view, if you're not governing innovation as an interconnected business process, you are doomed to fail. You need to have, just as when you drive a vehicle, you've got to have an eye on the road, you've got to be looking in the rearview mirror, you've got to be looking in the centre rearview mirror, and you have to be constantly vigilant. And that's really the role of the governance team who have their hands on the wheel of driving innovation in an organisation. And so setting the organisation up for success requires innovation to be ultimately dealt with at the executive table. And I think one of the key practices that we've seen is the promotion of people into this role of chief innovation officer. In fact, I had a meeting last year with Will, one of the executives at one of the major energy drinks companies in Thailand, and he very nice Scottish guy, and he very proudly presented his new business card to me with the title of chief innovation officer. Which is a great sign that we take innovation very, very seriously, to the point where we actually give the innovation leader a role at the most senior executive team in this business, because you are the person most in charge of our future success as an organisation. So I diverted from the topic of data governance, but I think the concept of strategic governance is probably even more important. The data governance piece is simply when we pull information through digitally and we present all sorts of information around, we're going to get 1.7 million return from this product, we're going to get 172 million from this overall portfolio of projects. We need to know that the data is right underneath that. So there's a whole set of practices for data validation in the background to look at that. But probably one of the concepts to really focus on is the organisation, the people and the culture part of it. So my friend Bob Cooper talks about three cornerstones to success in new product development: innovation strategy, innovation process, and people and culture that drive organisational success. So the way in which organisations have a culture that supports innovation is really, really important. And so there are tools, and I think you've spoken with some people recently with tools for assessing innovation maturity, for assessing the innovation culture within organisations. So I think in terms of enabling portfolio management success, it needs to be a permissible conversation within the organisation at all levels. It needs to be structured in terms of the overall organisation structure, and I mentioned the role of the chief innovation officer. Not every business has that particular role, but I know we go back into the early 90s when we all thought quality was improvement, and people were, I was working in the automotive industry at the time, and there was a lot of pressure from Ford and other companies to deploy Q1 and Q101 and implement these quality management systems. And so the analogy there was, who thinks quality is important? And at events I was at, everyone put their hands up. Who has a quality manager inside their organisation? Everyone had their hands up. Who thinks product innovation is important? And who has a chief innovation officer? I don't want to be preachy about it, but there's certainly a role and an opportunity to strategically define the role and the contribution that innovation can make inside an organisation. And it's a lot more than ideation, and it's a lot more than stage gate. It's a lot more than portfolio management. It really is about the interconnection of a systematic framework of innovation governance initiatives and practices that are repeated and supported through the organisation over time to deliver and get those results.
You know, and one of the things you said as you were talking about in a little bit there was, and I really like this, you have to be constantly vigilant. And I think that's not enough attention to pay to that, you know, because it can't be a set and forget kind of thing, because change is happening too fast, all over the place. It's just like we're hit from all directions on all these things coming in very fast. The pace keeps increasing. So I really like when you're thinking about portfolios and you're thinking about that strategic governance of the portfolios, that constantly vigilance. That was a good expression.
I guess it's the role of management in whatever dimension it is, whether it's safety, organizational growth, merger and acquisition opportunities, and so too, you know, innovation is one of those key roles that's there. But it is an area that is inherently full of risk. And, you know, we talk about the fuzzy front end of innovation and you know, that whole world of, you know, how do you understand which embryonic idea is going to be the next big breakthrough? So there's a there's an art and a science to this whole world of innovation, and there's a group of really good players in the game globally. So and underpinning it with some digital tools to make that information visible and easy and accessible and traceable is an important part of it as well. But it's very much about the other pieces of the puzzle as well.
Well, I haven't been counting, but how are we doing on our list of 10? I think we must. I don't think we got through all yet.
We haven't got through all. The last one probably is the concept of portfolio lifecycle, which is really around that initiating, planning, execution, and optimization. And I probably covered that a little bit with my governance story and my vigilance discussion. But it's around having a process. So most businesses engage in an annual strategic planning process. They'll break that down into a half-yearly process, and so it could be C1, H1, depending on how they go about that particular activity. It breaks down into the portfolio management world that used to be conducted on a monthly cadence. And again, we're seeing that done on a fortnightly cadence. Gate meetings used to be once a month. We're now seeing those weekly. In some busy companies, they're happening on demand. Or even more frequently. So I guess what's happening is that there's this trend towards more frequent planning meetings, more interconnection between the planning activities, that phase gate and stage gate processes are updating the innovation portfolio in real time. And so the digital world lets that happen. And then the innovation planning world can move from this annual planning activity to an activity that can happen, you know, at least half yearly in terms of what's going. And of course, that varies by industry and by industry sector. And some sectors have got very long life cycles, and some sectors have got very short life cycles. And so, depending on the nature of the industry that you're in, you know, some businesses just need to move really, really fast, and others, you know, will take the time to get it right. And I guess the good businesses probably have a mix of products in those portfolios, and sometimes they need to be fast and lightweight and nimble and agile and respond very, very quickly to get something to market, and other times they need to be really strategic and considered. And I guess that probably leads to, you know, one of the concepts we see in this world of project and portfolio prioritization. So one of the things that we spoke about in our last conversation, but we're seeing recurrently, is this concept of how do we scorecard ideas and projects? And I think that the parting comment I'd probably make is that, you know, just like a tradesman who comes to build a house for you or repair your car, there's no one tool that's right for every job. And so the concept, I've seen scorecards, and, you know, Bob Cooper's developed some great ones, and one we've seen recently that talks about strategic fit, and there are six other attributes that go into this particular scorecard. But I've got more than one client who's saying to me, why are we asking about the strategic fit of the project at gate one and gate two and gate three, et cetera? So we're revisiting that framework. And then when you reflect upon the fact that we said that perhaps in the consumer goods world, even in the chemical world, there's a high proportion of tactical innovation, renovations and line extensions to existing products. And so if we've already made the decision to play in those markets or to play in those product categories, we don't need to delve too much into the strategic fit question. But there are some other decision support frameworks that we've seen that work really, really well. And so one is called the Real Win Worth Model. So there's a Harvard professor, a guy by the name of George Day, who's written a great article about it, and he breaks it down and he takes those three concepts: is it real, can we win, and is it worth it, into two sub-questions in each of those categories. The methodology has been populated by 3M. We've used it in Asian clients where there's a tendency to step back and let the most senior Asian executive in the room take the decision. And we actually know that if we don't take the inputs from the cross-functional experts who are in the room, we'll sometimes make the wrong decision. And so we need to balance out risk using our cross-functional teams to bring those alternate perspectives from a marketing strategy, R&D, supply chain, safety, ops, etc. perspective. So Real Win Worth is another, like ABV, Real Win Worth is another very easy to remember acronym. And then the other one is IDEO's DVF model, so desirability, viability, and feasibility. And so particularly, again, in consumer goods, desirability or consumer intent to purchase is a very strong indicator and predictor of product success. So desirability plays very strongly in that. But so too do viability and feasibility. And that gets into the technical aspects of the product as well as the financial aspects of the product. And we've also been talking with the Sofion team in Europe, and they're adding an S to that. So now we're talking about D, V, F, and S, and they're bringing the sustainability dimension into that, because in the modern world, we need to ensure every product we bring to market addresses the sustainability needs and concerns and aligns with the sustainability strategy of the company, as well as helping us all be good corporate citizens and not bring products to market that are less sustainable than they could be, is probably the safest way to describe that objective. So that's a little bit of a drink from a fire hose, but a bit of a summary on those 10 key aspects. So that's a masterclass that I ran in Amsterdam for the Sofion team in February. It's also a component in another class we have, which we refer to as the Idea to Launch masterclass. And we'll be working with the Sofion team to set up dates for the delivery of those in the coming year.
Wow, Jared, that was a lot of ground covered in a short time. I know that you and I could probably talk a whole podcast episode on any one of those 10 dimensions or even more. But thanks for bringing it all together. You know, portfolio management, we have our annual conference where our customers get together and they share among each other. And we did one in Europe, we did one in America. And portfolio management was like one of the hottest topics. It's to the point now where I think people are really trying to mature it, do better at it, get better at it. And so, you know, it's just, I'm seeing it become more and more of a recognized discipline approach with some dedicated resource around it to actually do portfolio management. So it's fun times just to see this. So thanks again for sharing that with us.
Absolutely, Paul. It's and I do think it does go back to that ABV framework: alignment, balance, and value. If you can think about those and the different lenses, it's a complex task, and it really is a case of looking at the portfolio through you know, I love the concept of lenses. Let's look at it with rose-colored glasses, with bean counters, green glasses, and any other lenses that we might choose to bring to the table. Because it's those alternate perspectives that help us, you know, sift the good projects from the weak and take the organization to where it needs to go.
Yeah, great summary, Jared. Well, if people want to kind of follow you or keep track of what you're doing or connect with you, what's the best way that they could do that?
I'm on LinkedIn. My current role is I'm the managing director of Sofion Asia Pacific. And I'm happy to take any email. So it's simply jared.ryan at sophion.com. Be very happy to hear from any of your listeners, customers, interested parties, Paul. Really, and also interesting to learn. So if somebody wants to challenge some of my ideas, I'd love to hear some better ones. So it's a learning journey, and I've been on this one for a while, but I think there's it's a time to share and reflect, but it's also a time to learn from our customers, learn from the people who are out there doing this on the coalface. And I think that's one of the things we try and do with these masterclasses is, we always set them up in such a way that the collective wisdom in the room is greater than the wisdom of any one person in the room. So let's tap into that collective wisdom. And that's a fun part of my role is being able to do that, because we usually know in the room somebody who's really good at some one aspect of that innovation governance model and somebody else who's got something that they're really wanting to learn in that space. And so if we can make those connections, then we've just helped some people in a really good way. So happy to promote that way of working, and would love to hear from anybody.
Great. All right. Well, Jared, thanks again for joining
us. Thanks for joining us this week for Innovation Talks with Paul Heller.
This one and all the
ones. If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hope you all enjoyed that fun episode.
For additional information on today's topic, check out sophion.com.
Just connect, as he said, just kick it around a bit,
where you will find plenty of innovation-centric content and corporate best practices. If you'd like to discuss anything with Paul or would like to get in touch with the show, email us at talks@sophion.com.